This is FM 100.5 and 101.9. AM 1450, Rutherford County's place to talk. WGNS, Murfreesboro, your good neighbor station. This is The Truman Show with Truman Jones. A look at the politics, news, sports, and people that are shaping Rutherford County. Now your host, Truman Jones.
Good afternoon, Rutherford County. It's a great day today. Absolutely beautiful out there. And I have a great guest on today, Mr. Scott Daniels, one of our illustrious attorneys here. And he really has a great background and a great family background. And we want to let you know that his show is brought to you by At Home Care, Melissa Warren's business. And they come into your home 24/7, do all the errands, take care of all the duties inside, make sure that you just have to just sit around, enjoy your remote control, and just have a great life. You've earned it, and there's no reason for you to ever have to leave your home. They take care of everything for you, and give them a call, 713-4639. Or pull them up on the internet, www.athomecaretennessee.com. And their business is located on 237 Castlewood Drive, Suite H, right behind Kroger's on the Memorial Boulevard. And that's At Home Care. Scott, it is a pleasure to have you on today. You and I have been in a number of courtrooms over the years. Of course, I was on the opposite side, but I always had a lot of respect for you, and you were one of these attorneys that when you were representing a client, you were always in it 100%. I mean, you just threw everything in it, and you always did a great job, and I always admired you for that. But you did have an ace in the hole. You had Sandra Cullen as your secretary, and I can tell you firsthand, she is one of the more efficient people and loyal people that I have ever met.
Well, thank you, Truman. I appreciate you saying that, and I certainly would agree with you. We were in several, actually constantly in cases throughout the 30 years or so, 40, I guess, that I practiced criminal law here in the county, and I always had the greatest respect for you and your staff and the forces investigating, and although we were on opposite sides, there never was any kind of hostility or anything, and I always appreciated the fact that you did your job the way it should be done, and hopefully I did mine the same way. And you mentioned Sandra Cullen. Well, it's interesting that you did, because the one thing that is not my strong suit is organization.
Join the club.
She's absolutely the best in the world at that. Mm-hmm. And when it came to organizing cases and files and doing all the things that come to help a lawyer be prepared to do what he has to do, she's the best that I've ever seen. She also was a fantastic typist. She could type faster than I could speak. Before I'd get through, she'd generally have two drafts done before I got through speaking. So I just thought the world of her, but I kind of amused her with having her type. She was so fast that I had briefs and things that you have to prepare for court, so many and so long, that she had to spend virtually the 12 years she was there doing so much typing that ultimately it got to her hands, and she just couldn't keep up doing the kind of concentrated all day type of typing and things that you had to do, as many hours as it took to get it done. And it certainly was bad for me when she had to take on other kind of duties where she could still type but not have to do the kind that was just destroying her hands. So I missed her, but she couldn't have landed in a better spot than being with you.
She was just tremendous and still is. I mean, you can't have anybody. But, one thing that always struck me is after she started working for the sheriff's office, she still maintained that ideal, and I say I-D-E-A-L, or idealistic attitude that almost every person that you had that was there for a capital crime, which were the ones that I was usually involved in and those type of things, they were always innocent. I could not convince her. It stayed that way the whole time. And she's just, you know, just a caring person. But back then, when you had your office on West Main Street, that was really, to me, a special time, because the jail was on West Main Street at 400 West Main Street. You were right across the street, your firm was, and it was just a group of some of the most interesting people in the world. Your father would always come over, and almost every day would come and sit with me, and we would talk about some of the great things that went on in Washington and some of the other things. And then, of course, Norris Lovern and Carl Russell had a business, a bonding business over there, and it was just constant happenings, but they were always interesting. I wish that somehow we could go back in those days and just enjoy them all over again.
Life was so enjoyable back then, and it's changed so much since then. The whole society has. Now, everybody, you're on one side or the other. Back then, you were friends.
Right.
You fought when you had to fight, but then you made up and you went out and played together, you know, went hunting, fishing, ball games, whatever, mm-hmm. and you didn't let animosities creep into your relationship. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was wonderful. My dad kind of taught me that. He loved to go around the square and talk with everybody he'd run into, mm-hmm. whether it was the whittlers or the mayor or anybody else. Everybody was the same to him.
And yeah.
I grew up that way with his attitude, and of just taking everybody at who they are for what they are, and just enjoying anything they can tell me. And it was just a great life. And when we'd go across the street over there to the jail, it was great to be able to go in and know the people you're dealing with, and mm-hmm. not have to start from scratch with so many people that you would have to get to know again. And when you'd come out of court, there wouldn't be anything. You might walk out with a lawyer you'd just been arguing with, and mm-hmm. a judge you'd just been objecting before and been making rulings for or against you, but then you'd go over and drink coffee, and you wouldn't, it's just a different world. And I really loved it back then, but now that's gone. And the world is so intense and
more complicated.
More complicated.
It is.
It's just not the same. And I retired 8 years ago, and when I left, I didn't even look in the rearview mirror at the courthouse. I haven't had anything to do with the courts, not because I'm mad at anybody or anything of that nature. It's just that I've had other things, and it was no longer the pleasure practicing law that it had been growing up, where you just wanted to be around the other folks. It became such a pressurized mm-hmm. thing that it just wasn't the same atmosphere or the same enjoyable lifestyle. But I'll have to say, having 9 grandchildren and 4 children and other families kind of takes your time away too, and a lot of other things to do. So at any rate, the world has changed, and we've all had to change with it, but I'm certainly glad that I had the opportunity to live in the era when I did.
Yes.
And
best there ever was.
Get to know y'all as I did.
Going back some now, your dad was an attorney, and then he worked in Washington at the federal level.
My dad was, he went to school first to be a preacher.
Oh, my.
But then he decided to go to law school, and he went on, actually got him a teaching degree, too. So he had 3 different degrees. But he became city attorney, started practicing in Paris, Tennessee, as mm-hmm. a city attorney, and won an election as city attorney. And mom said, boy, we had it made when we got that $50 a month extra back in the Depression. That was what put us over the top. We were in tall cotton. Well, he then mm-hmm. got a job, got to know Heron Pearson, who was the congressman from that era, mm-hmm. area, and Heron asked him to come and be his administrative secretary in Congress. So Pop went to Washington then, 1935, I believe it was, and became the administrative assistant to Congressman Pearson. And later on, my dad actually ran for Congress once himself, but he was going in the Navy at that time and went on during World War II. But he went to Washington, and when he came back, he became the chief trial attorney for the Federal Trade Commission. Mm. And I'm proud of him, and I don't mind boasting about him. I had several of his people that worked with him at the Federal Trade Commission come to me and say, "Your daddy was the best lawyer I ever saw in my life." And he took on the highest cases you could have, some of them that went to the Supreme Court, and dealing with the biggest law firms and businesses in the country. And he had an incredible record. He was kind of the Perry Mason of that field, and I wouldn't pretend to compare myself or anybody else I know with him. He did, and that I didn't even see him. This is what other people told me.
He's a great role model.
Not what he told me, but I'm very fortunate to have somebody like that.
I enjoyed him.
Well, when he got through with that, he then was appointed by President Truman to be the secretary and executive director of the Federal Trade Commission. That means he's like the captain of the company. He ran the company. The commissioners themselves were like the board of directors. They'd make policies, but he'd be in charge of carrying them out and all the hiring, firing, and all that kind of thing. And he testified before Congress constantly. He went with a congressional subcommittee to Hawaii to investigate communism in the longshore industry in Honolulu. And one of the members of that congressional committee was later President Nixon. He was just a congressman at that time. It was very interesting, and I've got pictures and all sorts of things, write-ups and things about that. Well, when Pop finished there, he went in, formed his own trade association. When they asked him to stay on, actually, when Eisenhower was elected, they asked Pop to stay on, but he said, no, he was a yellow dog Democrat.
And I was going to say he transcended politics at that time.
He did, and he loved the Democratic Party and Roosevelt and all of those. In fact, he almost never forgave my brother and I for becoming Republicans. But he was asked to stay on, but he said, no, you need to have your own people with your own philosophy doing it. So he formed a trade association, one of the members of which was Red Rose Dairy in this town.
Wow.
So I had some connection to this, and Pop later on became when he finished with that, he retired as a federal administrative law judge and several different states, moved around finally to Nashville and retired when he was 70 in Nashville and came into my practice just to basically sit in the lobby and talk with people. And I'm sure he got us a lot.
He was the best PR man you could have.
He was. He would talk with people in a way that you just can't emulate what he did. He just had a knack for that kind of thing and a talent for public speaking. He was a fantastic orator. Fact is, and I do want to say this, and I know it's pumping my own dad, but I'd like to know, and that's what I understand the reason we're here for, is just to tell human interest things. In 1936, it was late in the 30s, Roosevelt could not get his program through Congress. He had a lot of laws he was trying to enact. So what he tried to do was pack the Supreme Court by adding an additional 6 justices to the Supreme Court. Well, they had what was then what called the Little Congress. It was composed, and I've got a big pictures of these people involved in that. In fact, Lyndon Johnson was one of the members of that. He and Pop got to know each other very well. But they had a nationwide debate on the radio where each side chose the person to argue for and against the packing of the court. Mm-hmm. And although Pop was a yellow dog Democrat, he taught me something by, I wasn't alive then, but learned about it. He opposed the man he thought most highly of, which was President Roosevelt, and thinking he just didn't think it was right to pack the court, and that the Constitution was what it was, and you ought to deal with it as it was. So he argued on that, national, yeah. On that national hookup, he argued the case against Roosevelt's position of packing the court. So I just was always proud and read all about that, and I've got pictures and things of him in the thing there. But he grew up in, raised us in Washington. I was born in D.C. and in Arlington. I lived in Arlington about 2 miles from the Capitol, and Pop would go down every Saturday morning and talk with the congressmen and senators and got to know all these, which was just fascinating. But I never cared a hoot about that. All I ever cared about was football and baseball and playing with my buddies, and I was never in a courtroom, courthouse, until the second year of law school.
Wow.
And he, Pop being a lawyer all that time, he just never tried to influence me what to do. But I'm proud of him, and I certainly feel like whatever I've been able to do is in the main following after his advice and trying to emulate him.
You couldn't fall into better footsteps and walk that same path that he did. One more thing about your dad. He was the best-dressed attorney ever in Murfreesboro. I have never saw him without a vest. He always had a three-piece suit on. He always had his gold chain watch with his three-piece suit, and he always wore a dapper hat.
Well, let me tell you, he did. I'll start with the hat first, because that's something that I came to. Back in the 30s, people wore these bowlers and Homburgs, mm-hmm. and all these different kind of what today looks fancy, but I guess it was somewhat then, but it was customary for people, particularly if you were in the type of work he was in, lawyers, whatever. So he wore all those, and he still had them when I got out of school, although people had pretty much stopped wearing hats at all, but he still wore his hat every
right.
day. Well, when I became a lawyer, he said, look, I had a hat with a feather in it and a different type of hat, and he said, look, if you're going to be a lawyer, look like a lawyer. Here's this hat. I felt self-conscious about it at first, but the more I wore it, the more I got used to people looking at it, and it kind of gave me a sense of confidence, because mm-hmm. when you can walk into an area and people stare at you and you don't feel self conscious about
right.
it kind of puts you at ease. So I always appreciated him for that. But he also, you were talking about there, the fact of that when he was in Washington, or when he was in his three-piece suit, that was something that they wore a lot mm-hmm. in Washington too, but he never got rid of that. That was something he did. And we went, Pop and I went to Hawaii. I had a deposition out there to take in a case that I was handling. And so I said, Pop, let's go there. Pop had been stationed in Honolulu on the staff of General Richardson, who was the essentially the head of the government out there during the war before it became a state. It was under martial law, and General Richardson was the head of it. Well, Pop's job was to deal with people coming in and out of the islands, and he mm-hmm. had to approve them. That's what he did. But at any rate, he was familiar with all the people out there, and so I said, Pop, you'd love going back out there. So he said he would, and he was well up in years then, retired. So we went out to Honolulu while I attended my business, Pop, just to talk people, talk them into a hotel, into extending our day stay there into a room that they didn't have. They said they were sold out. Well, and full up, and Pop just talked with so much foolishness with the guy. The guy got so tickled, he said, well, look, don't you worry about it. I'll find a place for you. So he got us another room. And we got back from there, and one of the people here in town, a real estate well, let's see, well, I guess he was in real estate in some regard. Mm-hmm. And he came up to me and said, "Was your dad in Hawaii any time?" I said, "Yeah, we were out there in whenever month was." He says, "I thought so. I saw a man walking down Waikiki Beach in a Homburg hat and a three-piece suit." And he said, "There couldn't be two people in the whole world dressed like that."
On the beach.
I said, "That was him. Well, why didn't you come up and say anything?" He says, "Well, I just was reluctant to, but he's seen it." So that was Pop. And mm-hmm. that's just the way he was. Didn't make a difference. And I'm not saying this facetiously, he would mow the lawn with a vest on. Mm-hmm. Generally take his tie and coat off, but he'd keep that vest on just about everything he did. And that's just the way he was.
Now, you and brother, of course, Jim, followed in his footsteps in a lot of ways. But you were in the Air Force, you were telling me earlier,
yeah.
and you were a JAG officer. Now, that had to be quite a bit different than being in a civilian court like you are here.
Well, it is. First of all, you're all in one office. We had maybe four lawyers. And the man who later became city judge here, Jim Campbell, was yeah. my boss. He was
oh,
a
really?
Staff judge
wow.
advocate. He's as fine a person as ever lived.
Well. Yeah.
I thought the world of him, even though, like everybody else, we'd get into it occasionally if we were on opposite sides or something.
Yeah.
But you would work with the prosecutor whose office was right next to yours, and you learned to get along with people. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, we'd go over and eat, drink, and go to the different restaurants or officers' club or something and sit down and just have a great time. And then we'd go back in our own room, shut the door, and study all our mm-hmm. case files and go into court the next morning and fight it out. So you just got used to approaching things from a standpoint where you were not adversaries except when you're in the courtroom. And that I found that great training for mm-hmm. later on approaching things when you got into civilian court. And the one thing I think I was telling you earlier I liked about the military courts, you had two things. One, you had to have two-thirds vote of however many jurors there was to convict.
Two-thirds.
That's all you had. You didn't have to have a unanimous verdict. Sounds terrible, but the flip side of that is if you didn't get your two-thirds, it was an acquittal. You didn't get another bite at the apple. So you'd go in there and knowing that, and one thing that was interesting about it was that you had
it's allergy season.
Yeah, I've got terrible sinus problems. I've had five surgeries for them, and that's part of what
Welcome to Murfreesboro.
But at any rate, you'd go into court with men on the court martial. We're all officers. But if they told them something, they took their oath seriously. And if the defendant had admitted that he'd done whatever it was he's accused of, but the court, because of some rule of evidence, says, "Well, you can't consider that," by golly, they wouldn't consider.
Oh, my.
They'd treat it just exactly the way the judge said.
That's amazing.
And so it was amazing. And I found out that not all juries were like that.
you got your jury up there. And one thing I always wanted to know, and now I can ask you, is there such a thing as voir dire in the military, or who selects the jurors?
Well, they generally were appointed in advance. They're appointed, but you have a right to, at least back then you did, you had a right to voir dire them to see if they had any preconceived ideas or any of the, kind of the same things you would do if you were voir diring a jury in a civilian case, only the command picked who was going to be on the jury. They didn't, the members of the jury, and you had to hope that the command wasn't packing it against you. But generally, I was very impressed with the juries in the military, and I never found to have any problem with them being any more biased or than any other jury. In fact, is in some ways I actually preferred the way they did it there.
Well, one other question in that area: it's supposed to be a jury of your peers.
Yeah.
Would a non-commissioned officer or a non-commissioned soldier would they have non-commissioned?
No. You had officers, and in the military, they were not peers. You could have officers of whatever rank they wanted to have on there, and you could be the lowliest private or an officer, too, of a lower rank, but you were being tried by officers. I think that they have changed that now. I'm not sure. It's been, you know, I got out of the Air Force in 72 when the base closed here. That's how I came to be in Murfreesboro, because I came to Seward. But I think I've heard somewhere, maybe watching JAG on TV or something, I don't know, but I just know.
Well, that couldn't be true.
I just know that I have a feeling that that's been changed to where they can, or maybe always do, have some enlisted people on the juries.
But I would think they would.
Back then, it was just officers, at least as I recall it. I don't remember any buddy being on there. If there was some reason why you could, I don't recall that ever being exercised.
We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with Scott Daniel.
In the Murfreesboro City Council election, the Murfreesboro Firefighters Association is proud to endorse incumbent councilman Toby Gilley and challengers Bill Jakes and Eddie Smotherman. We also ask your support in our efforts to improve our radio system for first responder safety and to ensure planned construction of a fire training facility in Murfreesboro. Please vote for candidates Gilley, Jakes, and Smotherman for City Council. Early voting March 28 to April 12th, Election Day, April 17th.
Paid for by Murfreesboro Firefighters Association, local number 3035.
Murfreesboro Medical Clinic is more than just a clinic. It's the doctors you can trust, a technician you can believe in, and a staff member who goes the extra mile. From the time someone walks in our doors, the difference becomes evident. All of our resources are used to improve the healthcare experience of our patients, and we have been a part of Rutherford and surrounding counties for over 60 years. Murfreesboro Medical Clinic.
Do you have unfinished projects at your house? Perhaps your house is busting at the seams, but you're not ready to move yet. Or maybe you're ready to move, but don't know where to start. No matter what
your
situation.
If you drive a GM vehicle, listen up.
We can do gauge repairs for half the price you're charged at the auto dealer, and it won't take 2 weeks.
This is Amy at Todd's Complete Auto Care Center. We can do it same day.
This is Shelby.
Come see me.
We're on Southeast Broad across from the Discovery Center.
This is Good Neighbor Events, brought to you by the Rutherford Home Show, Saturday mornings at 11:30 on WGNS. The Omni Hot Restaurant is and AmeriCare Pest Control.
I've got pests, buzzing rodents running all through my house. Ants chewing wood. And look, there's a mouse. I've overrun with pests. But you're gonna be sure, safe and secure. It's the last rites for those pests. Call the best of the best to get rid of your pests.
893-7111. AmeriCare Services Incorporated. Call us today. 893-7111.
Let's check some Good Neighbor Events from WGNS. And if you live in the city limits of Murfreesboro, early voting for the city election now through April the 12th. You're voting for 3 Murfreesboro City Council members and 4 Murfreesboro City School Board members. Early voting is available at the Election Annex at 426 East Vine Street, over at SportsCom on Memorial Boulevard, and at Blackman Elementary School on Fortress Boulevard. In addition, you can early vote now at the Election Commission office on the south side of the Murfreesboro Square. Once again, early voting for the City of Murfreesboro elections now through April the 12th. And Election Day is Tuesday, April 17th. And your income tax will be prepared for free if your total family income is $50,000 or less. This is being done at 2 locations, one of them at the Greenhouse Ministries over on Spring Street. The other one's at the St. Clair Street Senior Center, and at that location, that's for persons age 60 plus only. And you do have to have an appointment at the St. Clair Street location. The Bible Reading Marathon is April the 29th through May the 3rd at the Bible Pathways Ministries on West Thompson Lane. Those are Good Neighbor Events.
Do you have unfinished projects at your house? Perhaps your house is busting at the seams, but you're not ready to move yet. Or maybe you're ready to move, but don't know where to start. No matter what your situation is, we've got your solution. The Rutherford County Home Builders Association Home and Remodeling Show is Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, April 20th through 22nd at the Lane Agripark on John R. Rice Boulevard. There will be companies representing every aspect of building, remodeling, or sprucing up your home. Again, that's April 20th, 21st, and 22nd at the Lane Agripark on John R. Rice Boulevard. For more details, contact the RCHBA office at 890-8224.
This is Councilman Ron Washington, and I'm asking for your vote April 17th. I have proven my commitment to this community through volunteerism, service, and your trust. Serving a community is not just local involvement, it's regional and national. Experience matters. Vote Ron Washington, City Council. Early voting is March 28th through April the 12th. Election day is April 17th. I am Ron Washington, and I approve this message.
Now more of The Truman Show with Truman Jones on WGNS AM and FM.
And welcome back with Scott Daniel. And we've talked about your dad and you a little bit. Tell me a little bit about your family, because I know that you're very proud of them.
Well, I am very proud of them. I apologize if you can't hear me well. I have a terrible sinus problem, and the allergies and everything got me to where I'm having a hard time just talking at all. But I'm delighted to talk about my family. First of all, my wife, we've been married 46 years, Kathy. And
bless her heart.
And we met here in when she was coming up to college, and I was in the Air Force out at Seward Air Force Base. And I'd come in at night from work, and they had a big round table up at what then was Cook's Restaurant.
Yes, remember.
And so I'd eat up there, and all these people around there, including one who was a retired colonel, if I can just think of his name, it doesn't come to me right now, but at any rate, they had all these nice folks meeting up there. Mm-hmm. And so finally, they saw me every night, and they invited me to come sit with them. So I got to know all these, including one who was Ann Johnson. She had been the wife of the manager of the Penny's right across mm-hmm. the street there. And her husband had died of a heart attack, and so she would come up and eat there all the time. And she was just such a good friend. I got to know her that she, when my wife's mother worked at Penny's in Chattanooga, she asked, could she find a place for Kathy to stay? And so they told her, we'll call Ann Johnson in Murfreesboro. She did, and Ann took her in till she could get a room in the dorm. And so Ann introduced us, and that's how I came to meet Kathy. It was a wonderful time, and we had a rather whirlwind courtship. We met in September, got engaged in November, and married in February. And just
that's the best kind.
Oh, it was. It was just wonderful. We had such a great time. And then I guess we've had four children. Kathy stayed home. She just wanted to be a mother and raise her family. And my mother had never had. Well, she worked for a little while as a teacher, but my mother had stayed home and raised my brother and I. And Kathy wanted to do the same, so she stayed there and got the worst end of the deal, because she had to put up with all these kids we were raising. She said, well, I want to have 12 kids. Well, it didn't take long to decide that four was more than enough, but we had a daughter, Claire, who was the oldest, mm-hmm. then another Shelly, 2 years younger, and then Scotty came along more than 2 years after that, and then Jimbo finally was the youngest child. So we had the four kids, and they all were into all sorts of activities, and we had them in church choirs and church programs, I'll put it that way. Shelly and Claire and Jimbo all had beautiful singing voices. Now, Scotty never sang. I don't know if he's got a voice or not. I've never heard him sing.
I doubt it.
Yeah, he's, you know, he's 40 now, and I've never heard him sing. But the others all got music scholarships mm-hmm. to school, although Jimbo wasn't particularly proud of that. Mm-hmm. because he was a rough and ready type. But
he's a law enforcement type.
Yeah, he ended up being, he and Scotty both played football together mm-hmm. at Riverdale, and Scotty had a long time getting on the field, but once he did, he had a tremendous career in his senior season, and Jimbo was voted the outstanding lineman. He and Bubba Smith, who's down now, were the co-outstanding linemen of that Jimbo's senior year. And the girls went on to perform in the school Riverdale Singers, which was mm-hmm. a stage band
they
production type of thing. They were super. John mm-hmm. Bryan was the best I ever saw at presenting those type of things. And then Claire went on to become a member of the UT Singers, where they mm-hmm. traveled all over the country performing with UT stage band type of thing. And Shelley went on to Carson Newman, and they wanted her to become an opera singer, but
wow.
that wasn't exactly what she wanted.
Soprano.
So mm-hmm. She decided she didn't want to pursue the career of music that she'd gone into to begin with, and so she did enter and perform very well in the Carson Newman, Miss Carson Newman contest, and Claire was the featured singer and the star of the program that at UT when they had their school-wide talent show, and mm-hmm. never forget her coming down this long aisle with the dark and the in a kind of an evening dress, long dress, and the spotlight on her as she walks down there singing Georgia On My Mind. It's one of those memories I'll never forget. And then seeing Shelley get up before the crowd in this Miss Carson Newman thing, you know, it just kind of made my heart grow about 10 sizes.
Daddy's pride.
And then the boys went on after playing football. Well, while Scotty was in high school, he only weighed about 140 pounds, but he bench pressed 300 pounds, which was unheard of, more than twice his weight.
That's outstanding, yeah.
And he went on then to twice become national champion in powerlifting. Mm. We saw him once win it in Charleston, West Virginia, and the other time at, where was it? Went down with Mark Rowland, who also became national champion. It was amazing. Their coach here was fantastic. But they won.
Was that Coach Levi?
No. I can't think of his name.
Okay.
Doesn't come to me right now. It's been a long time, but he was super. Mm-hmm. So we went to those things, and they won that. And then Scotty went on to MTSU and became a star rugby player, all-star rugby player on great team, and I followed the rugby team all over everywhere where they played, and I saw them play. I remember a game against Penn State and Kentucky were the two that I remember so well, but I followed them everywhere and got to know all the rugby players and had so much fun with them. I just like a member of the mm-hmm. team as far as my feelings were. They're all my kids. And Jimbo went on into went to Ole Miss and then transferred to UT Martin in their rodeo program, and he became a professional rodeo rider. Then I followed him all over. When I wasn't at Scotty's rugby games, I was going to Jimbo's rodeos all over the country. I mean, they went from...
You have your medical card with you the whole time?
I just about needed. Jimbo got so many injuries. One night he came in, we went up to watch him in Cookeville, and he came over, Claire and Kathy and I had all gone up there. And he came over, and I noticed his pants were cut on the inside of his leg. I said, "What happened?" He said, "Oh, it's nothing." And he says, "Come on, let's go talk." So we walked in, and he walked into the restroom, and he said, "Look, don't tell Mama, but I've got this injury. Bull kicked me." And I said, "Well, look, we need to go to the hospital on this thing." So we went back and told them that he's through riding, and he wants to stay around and see his buddy so we can get Claire and Kathy to go home. They did, and we spent the night in the emergency room while they irrigated him. Fortunately, it healed up okay, but that was my first real experience with things like that. And I'd no telling how many kids in rugby that would get hurt there wouldn't be any other parents there. I travel all over the place, and a lot of times even the coaches couldn't go because of conflicts they had with their business or whatever, and so the captain would handle that. But I'd go there, and I'd have to take kids to the emergency room, and just somebody get hurt every time.
Oh yeah, tough
game. I came back from taking one kid to the emergency room, and there I saw the ambulance on the field, and it was Scotty being carried off and the neck brace and everything. And I went in and I took a picture of him, and he says, "Pop, of all the things, to take a picture of me in that condition, embarrassed the life out of him." I said, "No, someday I want to show this to you and show you what you put me through." Same way with Jimbo. He got kicked in his by a bull up in Michigan, and one of the riders' families took him in for a couple weeks till he was able to drive himself home with one leg in a full cast. He used his other leg, his left leg, to drive home, and just amazing. We just, all the things that they went through and saw, I'm just proud of them, and I'm glad I could be there to follow them, and I did the girls too, wherever they were.
Now, what are they doing now?
Well, Jimbo now is practicing a chiropractor here in Murfreesboro with his wife. His wife was quite a person. They met up in Iowa at chiropractic school up there at Palmer Chiropractic, and she was from Alabama, so they went back down there and they started a chiropractic practice in Alabama. And she was actually voted the national instructor of some type. I don't know if it was teacher, professor, or whatever, at a junior college where she was teaching as well as practicing. So she had tremendous credentials. And then she came to up here when they decided they have a son that's got a problem. They were born, the twins were born, and one of them died after 5 days. They were born so premature that barely a pound, and the little one, we didn't think he would survive. One of them died in Jimbo's hands, and the other one survived, and now he's 11 years old in the light of my life. And, we had to deal with that issue for a long time, so they moved up here to be closer to Vanderbilt where they could get a hospital. He's had so many surgeries of all different type, but they moved up here to be close enough to medical facilities that could treat him. But
great children's hospital.
And started to practice, and Jimbo has a business, bought a practice in Antioch, and 2 years later, Tara moved up here and opened the Murfreesboro office where they both work. I guess they're both there today. They both work at the Murfreesboro office, and as well as Jimbo handling the Antioch office by himself. So they're full-time. Scotty is worked here, as you know, at the Sheriff's Department here in Rutherford County for years.
Started with a great kid, but he's not a kid anymore.
Well, not anymore.
Yeah.
He's now, I was just telling you beforehand, make sure I got it right. He now is an acting and voting member of the board of directors of the Arizona Gang Investigations Association, dealing principally with what they term the Mexican Mafia out there. And he's gotten quite a experience and of dealing with the gangs, the roughest people in really, I guess you'd call anywhere in the country, maybe the world.
They are.
With the people he's dealing with out there. And Shelley's a sergeant involved in the personal security for the mayor and the downtown office buildings in Phoenix. Her husband was the head of the Arizona Gang Task Force, and he received an award about 3 or 4 years ago from the federal government for his work with a federal gang task force. And Scotty was voted the outstanding member of the Arizona State Gang Task Force 2 years ago. So I'm real proud of what they've done.
And I know you
Shelley sings in the choir and out there in the Baptist church, and Clarice, until she had so many kids she don't hardly have time to do anything, was a soloist here. So I'm proud of them. They all have their own niche in life, but I enjoy it.
We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with Scott Daniels, and we're going to talk. We're going to probably go in a couple more directions when we come back.
Hi, I'm Dr. Michael Jordan, an orthopedic surgeon with Middle Tennessee Medical Center. As the official health care providers of the MTSU Blue Raiders, we know the importance of getting players healthy and back in the game. Middle Tennessee Medical Center provides comprehensive orthopedic care with expertise to return each patient to an active and functional lifestyle. Our team is highly experienced in orthopedic and joint replacement surgery, which means better outcomes and quicker recoveries. To make an appointment with an MTMC orthopedic specialist, call 615-284-BONE.
Slick Pig Barbecue. Down on East Main, there's pork, beef, chicken, and wings. Sauce too good to be true.
Now at Slick Pig Barbecue, try the catfish special. Wednesday night between 4 and 8 o'clock. $9.99 plus tax for all you can eat catfish. The meal includes hush puppies, white beans, and homemade coleslaw.
Slick Pig Barbecue, 1920 East Main.
HGTV, the leader in home design and know-how, has joined Shaw Floors, the leader in flooring and city tile and floor covering, the largest flooring retailer in our area, to bring you HGTV Home Flooring by Shaw Collection. Doug Young with City Tile.
Come to City Tile and see the new selections of the HGTV products exclusively at City Tile.
Your HGTV Home Flooring by Shaw authorized retailer. Visit citytile.net. City Tile and Floor Covering. Make plans now to attend the May 5th United We Style fundraiser benefiting the United Way of Rutherford and Cannon Counties. During the May 5th show, you'll see the hottest trends that are hitting Murfreesboro and beyond. You can purchase tickets now for the United We Style fundraiser event. Purchase tickets online at tangerinesalonandspa.com. Support high fashion in your community and support the United Way. May the 5th in Murfreesboro at the Gateway Village.
We're here with Dr. Rishi Saxena, the only certified physician in heart CT in this area, talking about the 64-slice CT scan.
Other tests are invasive and they are not as accurate, particularly the treadmill stress test. Sometimes you may have a negative test, you may still have blockages.
Before heart catheterization or stress test, call 896-4800.
This is the earliest test where you could find information without taking too much risk.
Call 896-4800. It could be the 1 minute that saves your life.
It's time for the 2012 season of Atlanta Braves baseball. As the new season kicks off, we'll bring you every jack.
Ugla hits it in the air, left center field. Did he get number two? Oh, yes, he did.
And every huge win.
Freeman waiting. 3-2 pitch. Swing and a ground ball up the middle and through. Base hit. And the Braves have beaten the Giants.
Right here.
The Braves. Yeah, we got them. WGNS, Murfreesboro.
You've known him for years. Now you can visit with him every day. It's The Truman Show, continuing right now on WGNS, AM and FM.
And welcome back with Scott Daniel. And have we mentioned what all the kids have done before?
Well, there's only one thing that I hadn't put in, and I guess I need to do this. Claire is now the chairman of the Rutherford County Republican Women, and Austin's the chairman of the Republican County organization. And Austin is also, I'm so proud of him because he was a major in the National Guard, received Purple Heart for wounds, wow, and a Bronze Star for valor in Afghanistan.
So, congratulations.
And he's now in charge of the officer candidate school for, mm-hmm, the National Guard for the state. So I'm very proud of them. And Claire has got so many activities with all her kids, and they're all involved in different sports, playing football for Riverdale and running track. And there aren't so many things. We'd be here all day if I did the grandpa thing and list everything they did, but I'm proud of them. Glad that they could do it.
Well, you know, you and I were at up above Maple Street Grill yesterday, and they're having a benefit for y'all. YAEW, is that right? Is that how it is? It's youth arts.
I'm not sure exactly.
Well, we were there to listen to yeah, John Blankenship.
John Blankenship. His wife has a group that she raises money for that's involved in the arts mm-hmm. and the young people and so forth. A very worthwhile thing, and it's, I would certainly encourage everybody to come out and listen to John. He's fantastic.
Oh, my goodness.
I don't believe Marty Robbins could do any better job of singing Marty's own songs than John can do. He's just tremendous, and he can do just about any kind of music. But
one of the more talented guys I've ever run into.
Oh, he's fantastic.
One of the things that I found out last night that I never knew before about you is you're a connoisseur of music. Especially the old country music and what we would call the 50s and the 60s music, and you have a number of records. You know, my cousin Fred Goodwin has a ton of those old 45s, and evidently you have that same type of collection.
In fact, I've got a couple of Fred's compilations of records. So yes, I do, and I love every kind of music, and from the country as country to the most highfalutin. I'm not really too much into classical, but there are some opera type of singers mm-hmm. like Mario Alonzo that I very love. My brother studied opera, and my dad had a voice like Nelson Eddy.
Uh-oh.
And was offered a job singing in a nightclub in Washington. He just has always been a leader. My mother played the piano and organ by ear and played for all the churches and groups. And one time she was playing for the Baptist, the Christian Church, and everybody else, senior citizens and all. So music had been such a part of my life that I'm now kind of a DJ for nursing home and senior citizen daycare.
Good for you.
Playing old Bing Crosby and Hank Williams and Johnny Cash and, you know, anybody else that they want to hear. I have so much collection that I just really enjoy playing all different kinds of music, and they seem to like the fact that it's something that
we all love our era.
Back in their own era,
yeah.
So I feel good that I have a chance to listen to my own music with somebody else enjoying it at the same time. So it's really a lot of fun, and I enjoy it, and they seem to appreciate it.
Well, I think your brother Jim kind of got some of that talent, because I know we were all a lot of times drafted by the legal secretaries when once a year they would have a little function, a little fundraiser, and all the bosses got to go. But it wasn't really free for us. We had to perform on stage in front of everybody and make an absolute fool of ourselves. I remember I had the opportunity to sing, I think it was Rocky Top, with David Lowry and Don Ash, and there was a few others. But we walked around with duck bills on and waddled all over the place. But I never will forget, there's two singers that caught my attention, and your brother was one of them, and he wrote a song.
Jim wrote a song about Social Security safety net for you and me. It's a riot. And, you know, he actually, I don't know if he performed it or read it or whatever, his songs for one of them for Judge Morton, the federal judge in Nashville, who got tickled at it because Jim was in court before him all the time on Social Security appeals. You'd go into federal court. And one time he told Jim, he says, "Mr. Daniel, haven't you about cornered the market on these same Social Security cases?" Because Jim was up there so much. So he made light of it, but he got a kick out of Jim's. He had him back into his office, and Jim read him what he'd written, a thing about Social Security cases. And he's done lots of different things. Like, Jim's terribly talented, and
he has
a great singing voice. He studied opera, and he's had a lot of fun with it, as well as the talent end of it. He likes to write and recite. He can recite more poetry in 5 minutes than I've read in my life. I mean, he's just good at it.
The other one was Judge Jim Clayton, the late Judge Clayton, one of my favorite people in the whole world. And he could sing Folsom Prison Blues every bit as good as Johnny Cash could.
Well, he sang a lot of things like that. Clayton was really tremendous.
He was talented.
He was talented. He really was. He was super. and there were so many people that were talented. Unfortunately, I wasn't one of them in that direction, but we had so many people, they'd have talent shows among the lawyers every year, and you had a lot of people. My former partner, Russell Thomas, was a professional.
Good guitarist.
Oh, he was a professional. He had his own band back in Memphis back when he was in college or right after that, and he was very talented, and there's so many others that were that it was just, you know, it was really fun to get together back then. I don't know if they still do all that stuff or not, but that's one thing. Sandra, we were talking about Sandra Cullen, that's one thing she was involved in. She loved to get up groups to perform and do things like that, and she and some of the other secretaries that would get together and get shows up like that. So it was a great time. Being a member of the bar back then was certainly a lot of fun. I hope it still is for those that are in it, but they, you know, Clayton had an awful lot of talent, and there are just a lot of them that people wouldn't know about because that wasn't what they did routinely. But
yeah, when I watch him behind the bench when he would have a trial going on, I would visualize him up there with his guitar and say, you know, you were, have been an attorney over the years that has represented a lot of people in really high profile cases, many of them murder cases, and I have seen you in court. You always became emotionally involved with your particular case. You threw so much into it. I could always tell by the end of the trial you were really drained because it impacted you so much. Does that still stick in your mind, all of those cases that you've had all these years, and the relationship between attorney and the client?
Well, it does. And one thing that people don't understand, when you represent somebody, they may not be the salt of the earth, but when you get to know them, everybody's a human being, and everybody has something in their life or something that you can at least see an aspect of the character that nobody else has seen, and you try to put that forward if it's favorable and representing them, even if they've done bad things. But generally, you know, you represent them in the cases as you find them. You take the facts as they are, and you do everything you can to represent them. And if they told me they were innocent, and I took them at their word until I was convinced by evidence or otherwise that they weren't, even though the other people would start out with the idea, well, they must be guilty for whatever reason they thought they were. Well, I was on the opposite side. I mean, he's my client, so as far as I'm concerned, he's innocent until the jury convicts him, and unless I knew otherwise, I was going to believe him. And so try to present his side of the case the best that I could, and I guess I did get emotionally involved, but I try to put myself in his shoes and say, now how would I feel and what would I do if I was in this situation? How would I approach it from that standpoint? And I always try to play the devil's advocate, that is saying, if I was the other side, what would I say about this witness or this issue or something? How would I approach that and try to figure out the best way to approach something? And I learned a long time ago, starting out, that inspiration comes most often from perspiration. The harder you work, the more time you take investigating and thinking about the case, just literally just thinking in a room by yourself, the more things come to you, the more thoughts come to you, and the more things you can figure out how to do. And I just always felt like that you owe it to the client to do everything you can to help them. And I was fortunate that I was able to represent people in a lot of high-profile cases, including the one most people asked me about when I was fortunate to get to argue before the United States Supreme Court in a murder trial. And it was a very high profile case, though with practical matter not as high profile as another one, when they had outlawed the murder, the death penalty at that time. So it wasn't one of the three death penalty cases I had, but they threatened to blow up the courthouse during the middle of the trial, threatened to blow me and my office up, and it was just so much feeling involved in the case, and it was a very, very...
Well, we hid Sandra Cullen so they couldn't blow her up.
Well, she was there at the time. I'll have to say she was involved in that, and she was aware of all the threats and things that were going on. I'm sure she'd duck out time to time to get up to the courthouse and see what was going on. It was a very interesting case, and the thing of it was so interesting about it, I was appointed to that case by my former law partner, Whitney Stegall. He's the one that took me in. I guess I ought to drop a few names here just to give them credit. Dick LaRoche, who was a circuit judge here, when I first came here, he was a reserve officer in the Air Force. And I would see him once a month when he'd come in. He and John Rucker would come in together. They were officers, and they kind of took me under their wing and showed me how to practice law in the military as well as otherwise. And when I got ready to get out, Dick asked me to come in. He was leaving at that point, leaving the practice. And he had been partners with Whitney and had me come in, and Whitney took me in, and that got me started. And that's how I came to get practicing in Murfreesboro. And Whitney appointed me to that case. And, you know, that's where things went from there.
Much as I hate to say it, we've run well off of our time, and I hate that because it's been interesting the whole time, and it keeps building up. So, but Zach is going to have a heart attack over there, and it's been a great show, a great day for me. I've thoroughly enjoyed it, and I always enjoy being with you because you're always a quality guy. I just want to let you know that, Scott.
Well, I appreciate it, Truman. I'm sorry if I called you to run over. I wasn't watching
the
time.
No, you didn't.
And,
it was Zach's fault. We'll blame everything on him.
They always blame it on the other guy.
That's right.
That's the lawyer's philosophy. Okay.
We'll see you guys next Monday at 2:00.